Dylan Krutz, Score football analyst.
Bias towards offensive line. By that I mean find you an excuse of why an offensive lineman missed the block or why their job is hard.
Chicago Bears legend, six-time Pro Bowl center.
You talk about one of the greatest leaders I've ever been around. From football to the weight room to life, now he's in radio and he has the same passion.
Olin Krutz, every week with Mully and Haw. He probably doesn't like you, but he loves to talk Bears with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. Any day talking to Olin is like Christmas morning. And he joins us now on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Olin, good morning. How are you?
I'm good, guys. How are you? It's Victory Monday.
Yes.
I'm doing good this morning. The Bears, who won out yesterday? We talked a lot in the pregame show about it seemed like the plan wasn't working. By that, I mean the way the team was built for one day against the Rams, a depleted Rams team, obviously. But for one day, the plan looked like it worked, right? It looked like, the guy you signed to make plays, Montez Sweat, causes a fumble. Keenan Allen draws penalties. Swift runs the ball. Coach Eberflus does a nice job keeping the Rams and Coach McVay out of the end zone. And you walk away with a victory.
Olin, did you ever have a play where you lined up at fullback and made room for the running back? And were you jealous of Doug Kramer yesterday?
Yes, I was. Jealous when Doug got to get back there. I never got to do that. I was usually the guy snapping the ball, so I never got to line up at fullback. But it was fun to see him. And, you know, obviously everybody knows his story. He's from Illinois. He played at Illinois. To him, see him playing fullback and I heard you guys say it's called the mini fridge.
That was fun.
But it's a good play, right? It's a good play. Last week, we talked about Darnell Wright missing that block against the Colts. A lot of people talked about that. They got stuffed there, but they run behind the big guy again. They got Mercedes Lewis next to him. Nate Davis is in the game because of Tevin Jenkins' injury. Doug Kramer in the backfield. Roschon Johnson. And we're going to come downhill at you and stick this ball in the end zone after we just talked about on a 39. Keenan Allen, we talked about how important it was to get him back, draws a penalty on the Rams defense, right? So gets you to the one-yard line, having all your receivers there. Talked a lot about that room being the strength of their team. Showed up a little bit yesterday how the Rams had to play them with all those guys on the field.
Yeah, I thought that it was really interesting that it's almost as if they listened. I don't know if they listened to the leadership committee. I don't know that they listened to the complaints from fans, the media, whatever. But it's almost like they heard what everyone was saying about their failure to run. And they sought balance and they found balance. And it was, you know, what we talked in the pregame when Blasingame was eligible but not active. I thought, wow, like, you know, I know the guy doesn't usually like a fullback, but I guess they're just going to do their thing and they don't care about next thing you know, they bring out Doug Kramer. And as you say, you see the guy and it helps. It's just, it is more of a power running game than we've seen from them. And I know that's just two of the plays, but I thought they, you know, used Swift quite a bit. They got a touchdown from him. They got a field goal because he had a real nice catch on a screen pass. I just thought they did some of the things that people were complaining about.
Yeah, it was an honor in yesterday's pregame show to talk to the legendary Hall of Famer Jimbo Covert, right? He told us that when you play tackle, when you're struggling with pass blocking, the best thing to do is run the ball downhill, get the big guys moving downhill, get them moving forward. Now, it did take the Bears a little while to get warmed up on offense, right? But, you know, like coming out of second half, like you're talking about, Mully, we've been talking about. But who is the backup to Blasingame? If he is important, why don't you have a backup at fullback so you can run those packages, those concepts? They moved Cole Kmet back there yesterday in the second half, came out with him at fullback to start the second half, ran a few plays, ran kind of what they called a bend, and he was the lead back there. Then they checked down to him, come out of backfield on play action pass. Credit to Cole Kmet. Showed a lot of versatility, I thought, yesterday. to get that offense going, to get that offense into concepts that could work for them. And then Swift is an interesting running back, right? At the end of the half with a minute left, the Bears get the ball back and they get a field goal out of that, right? Caleb Williams hits Swift on a screen, checks down to Swift, avoids a sack, misses a couple balls to Odunze and DJ Moore. It's an interesting drive to watch, actually. But if you look at Swift there, I'm thinking about, man, I wonder, like, you know, some guys, you say you got to get the running back lathered up. I wonder if that's how you get Swift lathered up in the pass game. And then it seemed through that momentum seemed to carry into the run game. And we talked about how Coach Waldron is still kind of learning his players, what gets them going, how to get them involved in a game. It seemed like that drive, guys, the screen. And you know, he actually outran the offensive lineman for a big game there. But the screen got him going. The check down got him going, got him lathered up. And then he started running the ball downhill a little more, making guys miss and making plays.
How concerted do you think the effort was to minimize or limit what you did offensively for Caleb Williams and maybe give him less and expect more in terms of efficiency? They protected the football. But I'm thinking specifically of, like, last week we railed about 9 straight offensive snaps out of the shotgun and in short yardage situations. Yesterday it seemed, without going back and counting them, but I think of the 54 snaps, a lot of them seemed like he was behind center, especially in short yardage situations. How big of a difference do you think that made in him being able to manage the game? And what are your thoughts on just what they're giving him to do in terms of processing and calling out protections? And it seems like he's doing a lot of talking at the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, you know, interesting, when you take a really positive look at what he was doing, and you can say the same thing about Matthew Stafford, right? When you watch their game plan, a lot of under center runs, a lot of play action passes off of that. Strangely, a lot of times that works, right? A lot of times that is really what gets you moving downhill when you have, you know, the Rams also have their $17 million Jonah Jackson left guard out, and their starting center is out, Avila. So you kind of saw the same game plans on both sides of the ball. And Matthew Stafford's a very good quarterback, gets you in and out of plays, a lot of communication there, a lot of checks, a lot of kills, they call it, where, you know, is this a run or pass look? It will have a run called, but if they give us a good pass, they will kill to the pass. We'll have a pass call. If they give us a good run look, we'll kill to the run. But when you look at what Caleb is trying to do at the line of scrimmage and a lot of these pre-snap penalties, trying to use a snap count, I think the Chicago Bears, actually the older guys, are trying to get used to him, because when you have a high-level quarterback, they're trying to control the tempo of the game with their snap count. They're trying to control it by getting to line of scrimmage. You know, like you see Aaron Rodgers go on two and try to draw guys off sides, right? He's doing a lot of that, David, like you talked about. He's doing a lot of communicating at the line of scrimmage. Sometimes it looks like he looks at the sideline. He made like a diamond signal to the sideline there in the red zone and lined up in diamond on the numbers. So I think he actually told Coach Waldron what he wanted to run there. Now he missed DJ Moore. Not missed, but the Rams guarded DJ Moore pretty good one-on-one there on the left side of the field. But it's just interesting to watch this young quarterback grow. They did what they had to do to beat the Rams there, like you're talking about. And he is taking his checkdowns. And credit to him, he's trying to play smart football. As Strahan pointed out at halftime, he does hold the ball a little too long sometimes in that pocket. But some of those sacks, I think he's taking them when they're in field goal range. He doesn't want to make a big mistake. I think Coach Eberflus, we all know what coaching tree he's from, takeaways, right? And don't give the ball to them, and you'll usually find a way to win the game.
It is awful to see 10 penalties in a game, mm-hmm. and 5 of them are pre-snap penalties, Olin. I don't know. You know, it's one thing to be, like, very positive and excessively positive about, hopeful, whatever way you want to term it. But don't you have to kind of, and I hope privately that there's, you know, really, that's coaching, man. You cannot mm-hmm. let that, you have to have a standard, and you can't let people have 10 penalties in a game.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like you're saying privately, right? Lovey was like that. A lot of people said Lovey didn't yell, Lovey didn't get mad at us. But, man, I used to hear you guys say it, and I think, guys, I swear he just got it, just yelled at me. He just was not happy with something I did in the game. So, like you're saying, Coach Eberflus, maybe in public, is not saying what he's telling these guys, you know, like, you know, Williams jumping off sides, at the end of the first quarter yesterday when you know all they're going to do is try to pull you offside, right? Or Cole Kmet jumping offside late in that game when you're trying to run the clock out with the lead, getting a false start. Darnell Wright not lining up correctly when you know they're emphasizing that this year. Just a lot of false starts, a lot of penalties that you don't like to see, right? Even if you talk about Brisker's personal foul early in the game, you know, even Braxton Jones, big physical hit there on the screen they try to run. But everyone knows that's a penalty now. Now, I'm not saying I probably wouldn't have took that shot myself. I might have. So I'd be in trouble. That'd be one of the mornings that Lovey wouldn't have been happy with me taking a shot on somebody there. But like you're talking about, Lovey, like you're talking about, Mully, lot to clean up for the Chicago Bears. Take the win, a lot of good in that game, but like every week, but if you can find ways to win games when you have that many penalties and that many things go against you, that's also a positive. This morning, obviously, it's Victory Monday, so happy about the win. But when you get to what happened yesterday, how do we win the game? What do we have to correct when we have to beat better teams that are not so decimated by injuries? Obviously, those kind of penalties, you're not going to get away with them with the top teams in the league.
This segment with Olin Cruz sponsored by Fireplace and Chimney Authority. Visit online or their Elmhurst and Lyle showrooms. Okay, Olin, so Mercedes Lewis was given a game ball for his longevity. I think he set a record for tight ends. It's his 19th season. And a lot was made about the way the big dog talked during a meeting with Shane Waldron and the leadership council, to the point where Shane Waldron opened his Thursday press conference thanking the leadership council for granting him the audience with them. And I'm just curious what you thought. They did everything but transcribe that meeting. We knew everything that was said during that meeting. What did you think of that meeting, and was it cause-effect with what we saw yesterday?
I'm very interested by that. And you know, they if it works for them, it works for them, David, right? I mean, they talked about, I think DJ Moore talked about after the game, how much it meant to hold people accountable. I don't know why it takes a week four to hold guys accountable. I don't know if you want to admit to the fact that you have to ask your coaches to hold you accountable. Now, Mercedes Lewis, and the best thing that happens in an NFL locker room is that when the players take ownership of what's going on, take ownership of the problems on the field and get guys moving in the right direction and insist that guys do the right things. Now, it's funny, right, because they won the game, and so you'll say, okay, that meeting worked, but we just talked about the penalties, right? And they got to take ownership of that too, hold each other accountable, not have false starts. But, you know, to be honest, David, a little worried about a meeting like that, a little worried about our offensive coordinator. Now, we do win yesterday, but when I hear that you have to be asked, you know, it's like if you have a job and someone has to ask you to do your job. So, you know, we'll be watching these things. They are telling us that there was a good meeting and they got a lot out of it. And I just take their word for it after a win, right? After you watch them win a game, it was good. It was good to see them with all their weapons on the field. They are, when you look at the plan, they, you know, on that 36-yard run, right? DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Romo Odunze, Cole Kmet, and Swift are on the field. The Rams give them what they call a light box. By that, I mean, they give you as many defenders as you have blockers. Why? Because those guys on the outside scare you. So having Keenan Allen back helped yesterday. If that meeting helped them, by all means, I'm glad that they got a win yesterday. But as far as asking a coach to hold you accountable, it comes off a little strange to me.
This segment with Olin Cruch is sponsored by Plumbers 911 Plumbing Emergency. Call the plumbing professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. All right, so DJ Moore didn't. I mean, I'm not Mr. Body Language. I'm not following everything. He sat by himself at the end of the bench and he walked off by himself at halftime, and he did not seem to be overly excited by everything that happened in the game. Now, he caught 3 of the 6 passes thrown his way. Other than Swift, that's as many passes as anyone was targeted with. He had 3 catches for 22 yards and a touchdown. But I was asking David this morning, and we're going to talk to him a little bit later, why are so many short passes going his way? Why can't they get him down the field? Why can't they throw to him in situations where he's not on like a bubble screen or a little quick out or what? The usage of him is kind of infuriating. He came into the game 72nd among receivers, among 91 receivers, averaging 7.5 yards per route that he's running. Don't you have to get your best offensive player down the field a little bit?
Yeah, you do. And you know, I think that at halftime was that little miscommunication between him and Caleb there in the end zone where it looked like DJ slowed down, or I don't know what they were doing that route, and Caleb threw it. DJ Moore thought he was throw it somewhere, and Caleb threw it in the end zone, and it just didn't connect. Even then, it looked like there was a chance there, right, to get a touchdown before that field goal. So, and I think there was also the one, you know, same thing happened with Romo Dunze. I think he threw the ball out of bounds, and
right.
there was a call that could have been a holding call there, but it wasn't a holding call. I don't think he would have caught that ball anyway. But to the bigger point of what you're saying is, you know, which Coach Shane Waldron is, again, like we talked about DeAndre Swift, right? Does he get lathered up more through the passing that helps him run the ball better? Same thing with DJ Moore, right? I think Waldron is trying to learn, and so is Caleb. What DJ Moore does well, how to use them, how exactly to use them with all their weapons. First game, we talked about Keenan Allen's back again. I think there's just a lot of moving parts in here, guys, even with the offensive line with Tevin Jenkins going out, right, and Pryor moving to left guard and Nate Davis coming back in. This thing is constantly evolving. Maybe they'll have another meeting, right? Maybe they could have another meeting about DJ Moore and how to use him and how to get him involved in the game, because we all know what kind of player DJ Moore is. And look, he was frustrated at the end of the first half. So were we all watching this offense again, trying to get going, trying to get moving, trying to find concepts that work for each other. They know what kind of player he is. He knows what kind of player he is. A good question for him would be how much extra work is him and Caleb putting in after practice, before practice, in the building to get to learn each other so they're on the same page. Because really what you want there between a quarterback and a wide receiver like DJ Moore, guys, you want a little freestyling. By that, I mean Caleb looks at DJ Moore without saying a word. DJ Moore knows exactly what he wants, what route he wants, what little adjustment he wants, when to speed up, when to slow down, those kind of things. I think they'll grow into that kind of combination, those two guys with the talent they got. I think eventually, remember now, we're only in week four here, right? Bears are 2-2. I think eventually they'll grow that relationship. It'll grow into that. And if obviously the coaching staff and everyone has to help put all those things together.
Good stuff, Olin. This is a good meeting.
Yes, it was a good meeting. And you know, I always have that problem. People tell me, I never tell them what I think.
I'm glad you're honest with us.
Thanks, Olin.
How about that punter, by the way? How great was that guy?
Yeah, man. Come on, I tell you what, that 66-yard punt, woo, that was something. And I never thought I would see a punter flex, and I'd be flexing with him. You know what I mean? He was flexing, and I was on my couch flexing with him. But yes, you know, when they took – that's what I'm saying, guys. It's a game where you can see Ryan Poles' plan, right?
Yes.
Like, that's what we talked about in pregame. You're like, gosh, I just don't – the offensive line plan doesn't look right.
Yeah.
Right? I just don't see your plan.
But
this one, the punter –
If Brad Maynard ever would have flexed in front of you, you would have been having another meeting, another kind
of
meeting.
No. Maynard was my golf partner. Okay. Now, Maynard hit the hell out of the golf ball. So, yes, Maynard was a good player. That group, right? Maynard, Manley, and Robbie Gold. I'm a big fan of special teams helping you win games.
That's true. Great stuff,
Devin Hester. I'm sorry. Don't forget the Hall of Fame.
Oh, my God. Devin Hester. All right, Olin. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Dave Tobe. Okay, thank you, guys.
Dave Tobe. There you go.
All right.
Take care.
That's Olin Krutz. That's great stuff. 312-644-6767. We're going to get to your phone calls. Mullen on the score.
And Matthew Stafford will get another comeback victory. Now he goes to work at a 6-0. Oh! That ball is out, and the Bears defense may have come up with a crucial play. When the offense has struggled, the defense has come alive. Montez Sweat knocked it free. Kyler Gordon comes out with it in Rams territory.
I mean, I see around the league some of these good edge rushers getting these one-on-ones with these tight ends. And I kind of look back at my film, and I see I don't really usually get those opportunities. So it was cool to get that opportunity that one time and capitalize on it.
You thinking, what are they thinking?
I definitely felt disrespected.
That is the voice of Montez Sweat. He felt disrespected that they tried to put a tight end on him. You're listening to a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Fireplace and Chimney Authority and Busey Bank. And, man, it was fun to watch some of that stuff, to watch some of those defensive plays. And frankly, they did take advantage of field position. They did flip the field a couple of times thanks to the punter, and it's important stuff. And they did need a punter, and they drafted what Ryan Poles called the guy he called the best punter he's ever seen.
Yeah, Torrey Taylor definitely justified his draft position on Sunday. Long of 66, average of 55.4, 3 inside the 20, good for him. Montez Sweat did what he's paid well to do as well. He definitely created havoc in the secondary or in the backfield. He forced the fumble. Javon Dexter is a guy, though, I think that as significantly as any other development yesterday, it was his stepping forward again. He had a tackle for a loss. He had a sack. He's been, in four games, he's been the kind of player the Bears needed him to be and taking that kind of step this season, because that is a position very important, as we know, in this defense. You expect it. I mean, you don't take it for granted, but you expect Montez Sweat to win a one-on-one and to be the guy that creates the big turnover and has a key sack. You expect, frankly, Jaquan Brisker in the secondary, and Jalen Johnson had a great tackle yesterday. You needed Javon Dexter to take a step forward, and so far I think that's happened.
All right, we've got several people who want to check in. 312-644-6767. We'll start with Ken. Ken's on the road. Hey, Ken.
Hi, guys. Yeah, I'm off the road now, but I was going to talk about the Ryan Williams play, the 75-yard touchdown.
The Alabama.
You guys have talked about it in terms of, Alabama. You guys have talked about it in terms of clutch plays, and I was thinking, where does that rank in terms of clutch plays? And I thought, boy, that's not even Alabama's probably number one clutch play, because, you know, last year they had the 31-yard touchdown on fourth down that allowed them to go into the playoffs. So that's not even.
Yeah, but it was the best play of the weekend in college football. I don't know about Alabama's rich history of clutch plays recently. I don't have a good access to that in my memory, but I do think that what we saw from the 17-year-old wide receiver for Alabama, that was phenomenal, and that's something that it's going to be hard to find a highlight any more exciting or electrifying than that one.
Listen, that was a very special play. It was great. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. It won the game. It was a game they were leading, and then all of a sudden they're trailing, and you're thinking, oh, my goodness gracious, how do you come out of that? And
Alabama's been the most successful college football program over the last decade. I don't know where it ranks in terms of all-time highlights, though.
No, I don't know where it ranks in Alabama history.
I can.
Let's try Griff. City Griff is on the line. Hey, buddy.
Hey, guys. Long time, first time. Really appreciate what you guys are doing. Molly, I'm not quite as old as you, but David and Olin, I'm about the same age as them. And I'm sorry, but you guys sound like you're showing your age a little bit. If the Bears want to have a players-only meeting or a leadership meeting or anything like that, if the ends justify the means and they get wins, who cares? That's the generation we're in, guys. And so what if they do that? So, I mean, that's my point. That's what I told Dustin. Let them be. Have a meeting every day. Get wins. Let's go win the Super Bowl.
Kumbaya. Yes, City Griff. I think you should let them meet. Let them talk. Let them connect and bond. Heck, next time put it on IG Live. Why not? Go ahead.
I mean, honestly, I thought it was just a little too much information that you normally don't get out of football teams. And the idea... Well, you know, I thought it was a bad look for Shane Waldron, not as a coach, as a leader. I mean, when you've got guys telling you, oh, we went to him and told him, Dave, It's not Pop Warner. You're an NFL coach. Coach us. Don't be afraid to come to – like, I just thought, wow.
Well, look.
That's not a good look for the coach.
My take on it is that the content of what was discussed was more troubling than the fact that they discussed and met and did, you know, a meeting and held a meeting that we knew everything that was said. I didn't like the fact that Mercedes Lewis went public, even though this is what we're here for, that he went public with – information that I think really undercut the credibility of his offensive coordinator. Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you describe somebody as walking on eggshells in a leadership position, you're not depicting a strong leader. You're depicting somebody who might be not as qualified for the job as you would want. You're questioning his credentials without trying to overtly question his credentials. Now, by the same token, we have criticized the lack of communication with the Bears coaching staff and the players, and something's out of sync and coming out of Indy, everything seemed out of sync. So the fact that they met doesn't really bother me. The fact that they were as open as they were about what Shane Waldron, you know, the way that he was connecting as a leader, was a little bit more troubling.
I'm just amused right now because so many people are checking in with different ideas about Alabama and the best plays in their history. And and somebody says, hey, what's the most exciting play in LSU history? It's from Peoria, Matt. I mean, yeah. I don't know.
Might have been.
It's right. Probably it.
It involved Joe Burrow, probably. I'm not quite sure that the origin of that question. This is not Tuscaloosa.
No, it's so funny. Let's try Tom. Tom's on the road. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Molly. Met you once a long time ago. I'm a friend of Fiegel's from the South Side.
Ah.
Anyway, I knew somebody was going to say, well, this is coaching that's causing all of these false starts. How about blaming the players? Self-discipline. You think the coaches have to explain to them the ball? You can't move until the ball's hiked?
Well, I think, honestly, I think they better. I think that whenever you talk about penalties, it reflects on coaching. It means that you've got a standard that's substandard, that you cannot allow players to do that without being disciplined. It's that simple. And you know what? I hope they're looking at the tape and they're going over it and they're like, hey, what is this? I don't know what's going on. I don't know why they had so many pre-snap penalties, but that's not allowed.
I have an idea. I think that
because they were changing things.
Well, no, I mean it's not acceptable. I'm not excusing it, and I'm certainly you can't condone it, and you're not going to win unless you fix it. But I do think when you have a rookie quarterback to whom you've given such tremendous responsibility for changing things at the line of scrimmage, I'm guessing here. Okay, this is an educated guess. He seems to be very. They've given him a lot of autonomy to diagnose and to dictate and to talk, and there's a lot of rhetoric at the line of scrimmage. And sometimes with a new voice, and a relatively new voice, he's a rookie quarterback. It may not be like the one thing that I'm thinking of, the Cole Kmet motion penalty. He didn't really have that in sync. He wasn't nowhere to stop. He started toward the line of scrimmage, and maybe that's a cadence thing. You expect a certain cadence, and maybe that was on the quarterback as much as it was the tight end. They seem like they needed more experience together and more experience doing that. Doesn't excuse it. You need to have a standard. You can't tolerate it. But I do think that this is all part of the growing process with a rookie quarterback at the helm.
And that may well be the case, but I would still have a word with whoever jumped offside. I would still make sure that I talk to them about the reason why. I talked to Cole Kmet about why he jumped off twice on pre-snap penalties, and I find out, why isn't the whole line doing that? Why are you the only one doing it? I would confront him about it. I mean, you know, I think it's fair to say that it's on players, but the standard is the standard, and it's not allowed. And you cannot have 10 penalties in a game and think you're going to win much. Again, the Bears are very fortunate that they have a lot of, what would you call it, bad teams on the schedule. Let's be honest. You know, the Rams looked like they were going to be better, but they're really beaten up. They came into Chicago with a lot of injuries, three offensive linemen out, both of their best receivers missing the game. the Bears are lucky in a lot of ways that they made mistakes like that against a team that really couldn't overcome their own errors. And I think that, as we mentioned earlier, that Jared Verse, that guy might have been the defensive player of the week if they weren't holding people on defense, right?
Well, yeah, he was disruptive. He was quick off the ball, and he was very physical. He did not make you feel better about your offensive line the way that he was bull rushing Braxton Jones. I don't know that they had an answer for Jared Verse. He was somebody who you look at and made you wonder. He's from Florida State, right? Made me wonder about the greatest pass rusher in Florida State history, or the greatest highlight in Florida State defensive history. Molly, what was the biggest highlight in Florida State football history?
I mean, there has to be one really big one. Probably their championship year.
I'm just saying.
We did ask a question about the best part of the college football weekend. That's what he was responding to.
Okay,
but he wasn't really responding. He was asking if the best
part of the college football weekend was the 75-yard touchdown to the young receiver, yes, Taylor, that we referenced.
The greatest question, play in Alabama history.
The question, Dustin, was asking me to compare that to other highlights in Alabama football history.
We should call Pat Manley. He was there.
He was in Tuscaloosa.
No, he's.
So was Ryan Poles, right?
Yes, you're right. He was at the Tennessee Georgia game. Alabama Georgia game.
Were they together?
Pat Manley and Ryan Poles? I don't know.
Wouldn't shock you. Let's try Sean. He's in Romeoville. Hey, Sean.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
You know, I think I've been looking at this thing all wrong. There's a word that fans don't like to hear, and GMs know that, and that's rebuild. That's really what this deal is, and I guarantee you, behind closed doors, if you ask Poles personally, he doesn't care as much about winning this year as we do. Of course, he wants to win. He wants to know one thing at the end of the year, if he has his 10, 12-year stud. And if he has that stud, you watch him cook in the draft moving forward.
Sean,
I guarantee you that's what's obviously winning's great, but I don't think he's as concerned about it this much as the fans are. Rightfully so. We want to see a winner, and you can't use that unpopular word rebuild, but that's still what it is.
Thanks, Sean. I don't agree with that at all.
You just cut off Sean.
I didn't mean to cut off Sean. We got to get to a break. We'll talk about it when we come back.
Why don't you agree?
This is not a rebuild. This is year three of the Matt Eberflus regime. He's got to win, and there's an implied or else.
That's very true. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
This is the NFL, right? It's a one-week league. You win a couple games and you're all that in a bag of chips, and then you lose a couple and you're the other thing. So it's water off a duck's back. You know, you got to make sure that you're focusing on your job, focusing on what you do, and making corrections. You know, either way, you can't get too high, you can't get too low. You got to be steady. And that's what you got to do as an NFL coach and an NFL player.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the voice of Bears coach Matt Eberflus. And I don't think that he would agree that he's in a rebuild, because this could be the end of his career. Had they lost that game, what would we be talking about?
Oh, come on. You know what we would be talking about. We'd be talking about Matt Eberflus starting 1-3 after starting last year 0-4 and question everything he does in training camp in the preseason to prepare his teams inadequately for the season. This is a must-win season for Matt Eberflus in the context of his head coaching career. This is not a rebuild in Chicago. This is winning time. Now, does that mean winning the division, taking the North, if you will? Does that mean getting to the playoffs? Not necessarily. But you've got to finish the season with the arrow pointing up. I feel like you've got to win more than you lose. You could do both and not get to the playoffs and buy yourself another year or maybe the benefit of the doubt. But I don't think that you can look at this as a rebuild and use that as an excuse, as a crutch, as something to lean on because you're off to a slow start.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I like that Flusie's flexing a little bit, that he's feeling pretty good, and he's like, hey, that's the business. But the reality is, since he's been in the business, that is the business. You know, you lose, and you're a loser. You win, and you got hope and you get another week with your job. And I know that the guy's not being fired or anything like that. Not if they were to let him go, it'd be after the season's over. But I think that there is nothing wrong with having a standard. And it's interesting to hear him defending Shane Waldron there. But the reason Shane Waldron was under scrutiny is because they had lost two straight games. And they lost them in poor fashion. And last week was ridiculous. So you come back and you win a game and it's good. Everyone's feeling good and everybody is happy. And there are plenty of things that you have to work on. But there is a positive vibe. And you know why there's a positive vibe? Because you got Carolina coming in here.
Yeah.
Because you're going to play the Jacksonville Jaguars in London. Because then you get a bye week and you come back against Washington, the Commanders. We don't know how good they are, if they'll still be good by then, but that'll be interesting.
If you want to wonder if this is a rebuild or not, try coming in here next Monday if the Bears somehow find a way to lose to the Panthers. There won't be an excuse or there won't be the justification. Well, they're in a rebuilding season. No. You lose one of the next two games, all of a sudden the heat intensifies for Matt Eberflus, because the reality is that he has to win this year. You heard him. That's the NFL. It's a 1 week league.
That's it.
1 week at a time. This week there was a reprieve. There's a sense of relief, but I would be careful in rejoicing because this is not over yet. They still have to win more than they lose this year. They're 2-2. Okay, that's where they need to be. They could not have afforded to start 1-3.
Tell you what, it does not look like they're going to be able to split with Minnesota if that was part of the plan. We know the Flower has beaten them repeatedly. I'm just saying, this schedule, until you get to the division portion of it, you need to load up and win games. That's the reality of the NFL.
Six games in the division. Can the Bears win more than they lose in the division? I don't know that you can say that right now and mean it. You'd be maybe 500 is the best you can hope for. This is a very strong NFC North.
All right, we've got DJ Moore will join us next. We'll get a chance to talk to the Bears wide receiver. We'll do that next. Mully and Haw on the Score.